from the Sylvan Green Studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. It is time for another Save the Turf episode of Chemical-Free Horticultural Hijinks, You Bet Your Garden. Are you itching to do something for your tattered turf? Well, don't open those bags you got from the big box store. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and I'll tell you how to care for your lawn correctly. Otherwise, it's a fabulous phone call show. We will take your telecommunicated questions, comments, tips, tricks, suggestions, and gratuitously genial confestations. So keep your ears right here, because it's all coming up faster than you having the nicest looking lawn on the block right after this.
WDIY presents a selection of award-winning podcasts that air weeknights from 6 to 7 p.m. Listen to important conversations regarding art, science, business, health, and more here in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Check our website for new topics and archived programs. WDIY podcasts are on 88.1 FM, streaming at wdiy.org, on the app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. I am your host, Mike McGrath, and this is In the News. It was going to be about the history of bananas, but my main computer went feral and locked me out of just about everything. So I'm writing this on the business office computer, kind of freestyle. Well, that's how I do write most things anyway. Back in the good old days of Organic Gardening, the magazine, not the method, I used to deliver regular updates on my personal garden, which was fun and helped the readers realize that, one, they were not alone in the fight against slimy slugs, dastardly deer, and evil squirrels. Oh, and toxic neighbors, one of the most frequent complaints we receive. And two, that everybody screws up, falls down, and some of their plants die. No, you are not alone. Gardening is not a passive pastime. Some days, it is more like a steel cage match. And hey, this report, if I ever get around to it, is actual news, as I am about to reveal the status of my growables as of April 13th, 2026. April 13th. Maybe that's why I got so many bills in the mail. The day had begun well, however, with one of my red-tailed hawks gliding at about 10 feet high and 10 feet away, right past the kitchen window. One of the things I first noticed when we bought this property back in the mid-80s was the prevalence of red-tailed hawks. They had no nest I could find, so every year I would go searching. And after several years, I finally found their huge nest at the top of one of our tallest trees in the backyard. Never found that nest again. Very talented at camouflage, those huge and beautiful birds. Shortly afterwards, I saw my first butterfly of the season, a dazzling black swallowtail. Then the mail came and I was drawn screaming and kicking back into the real world. But the previous day, we were finally able to begin planting. This means that my capable assistant, the awesome Ninja Sean, did the planting, while I, limited by my oxygen tubing and medical orders, sat on the patio watching the Phillies game on the radio and pointing occasionally. We, again he, planted super cool red skin potatoes with yellow gold insides, which had been waiting for the soil to warm up for weeks. Never plant potatoes in cold soil, oh restless ones. We planted two different kinds of snow peas. I had been pre-sprouting for way too long. One batch had glommed together and now looked like a spider web. And lots of leaf lettuces for cut and come again salads, almost all in big containers on our patio for easy picking and eating. My other batch of lettuce is growing in an old barbecue grill that still looks really good, works well as a planter. It is the perfect height, and I can just close the lid on cold nights or during hoped-for deluges. Oh, and Tithonia to feed the monarch butterflies later in the season. And what? I'm out of time? Well, please call or email us about what you're growing. But now, on with the show.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden. I am your host, Mike McGrath, and coming up a bit later, have you been assaulted by this ridiculous leprechaun lunatic who wants you to feed your lawn? He is the enemy. That's not what you should be doing right now, but I will tell you what you should be doing, and what a shock, it doesn't involve any chemicals, after more of your fabulous phone calls to 610-694-8100, extension number 3.
Hi, Mike. This is Marion. I'm from South Philadelphia. You've helped me before with my fig tree, and I want to let you know it's doing great. I have a small patio, 10 by 9, and another patch about 10 by 3 in the front of my house. We removed the lawn years ago, and I planted Dwarf Mundo and Sedum in there along with some rocks. Even though the Dwarf Mundo and Sedum are very tight, they are still overrun by weeds, which are getting worse, and it's really tedious. I want a low maintenance choice, so I decided to get rid of all this. I understand preen can be used to keep the weeds out without killing the other plants, but I have read that preen is not good for the environment. My plan is to cover everything with cardboard and tarp at the end of the season until next spring. I was thinking of planting small bushes or short plants. Can you suggest any that are native and do not grow high? I would also like to know what's better to keep out the weeds in between the bushes and small plants, either small rocks or mulch, so I can keep it low maintenance. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, thank you. First, preen, the heavily advertised herbicide, is a noxious chemical that doesn't belong near anyone's home. And again, especially in a crowded environment like South Philly. And I have to reveal that I pulled no magic on your fig tree. A lot of fig trees grow in South Philly, and it is such a crowded area with lots of walls and buildings and its own heat sink that fig trees are protected naturally over the winter. And depending on your layout and where you can plant the tree, you probably don't have to winterize it. Now, what are you going to plant? Everything you have described will allow opportunistic plants to grow between it. low maintenance. You know, I don't know of such a thing. I've been gardening for well over 40 years. And low maintenance is when you give up and just let the garden go to Hades that year. Now you got a blind spot where you had a lawn. Had you called before you took out the lawn and got into this mess, I would have told you to leave it there. There are people out there who scream that lawns are not native plants and they're not helpful to the environment. You mean lawns aren't a giant mass of living green plants that stabilize the soil, crowd out weeds if cared for correctly, and turn our carbon dioxide back into some oxygen for us? Lawns are totally okay if you care for them naturally. And if you care for them naturally, you're never going to be tempted to buy anything because you're not going to have any problems. Cardboard and a tarp. If you really were going to fully plant the area, I would say, especially if you get full sun out there, to do a solarization. In short, this involves saturating the ground. I mean, totally. It is like a sponge that leaks when you look at it. So before you do that, you got to get rid of everything you can and level out the soil. Then you saturate it, and then you stretch clear plastic over top. Not black plastic, not a tarp, not six couches that you want to get rid of. Clear plastic tightly, and you hold it down at the edges, in your case, probably with bricks, and just let it go dormant the entire summer, during which the sun, being concentrated by the clear plastic, will destroy anything in your soil. All weed seeds, all perennial weeds, all diseases. You will start out the next spring with a totally clean slate. Now, in the meantime, this may not look especially pretty, but I do know there are many professional sign shops in South Philly. So have somebody make up a nice professional size that says new garden in progress. You mentioned stones. Weeds love stones. When you put stones down, you create areas around the stones for weeds to flourish. And then the stones help them stay in place. So stones are not a mulch. And when you say mulch, well, anything that covers the soil to prevent disease and hold moisture in the soil and keep the soil temperature constant is a mulch. What they sell in the big box stores in the bags with the black liquid pouring out the bottom is chipped up wood trash. It's kind of wood. It's old construction debris. It's pressure treated wood. It may be even wood used in marine situations, which is impossibly toxic. And then they spray it some god-awful color, and people buy it because their neighbors buy it. If you wish to mulch, mulch with finished compost. That means compost, not composted manures, not a white bag with a black lettering that says compost. You want high-quality compost. What I would instead suggest is you establish garden beds that are 4 feet wide wide? No. Well, 4 feet by 4 feet is one size depending on what you got to work with. 4 by 8 is what I use. Now, typically these are going to be framed, but you don't have to. Mounding was the original way this was done. But there are some super cool kits out there where you can frame your raised beds very easily and inexpensively. So I would suggest you create an area of raised beds, get your lawnmower, and make the distance between the beds enough for your lawnmower to go through. Then you plant those beds with whatever you want. Roses, native plants, tomatoes. How can you live in South Philly and not grow tomatoes? Lord. And whatever you want. Mix vegetables and herbs, flowers. And then when the lanes, the growth in there becomes high enough, just go over it with your lawnmower and leave it there. Eventually, after a season, that stuff will have turned to compost and you can rake it up onto your garden beds. But that will look very attractive and you'll get something out of it. And if you plant small individual trees, which your local garden centers will be happy to provide, there's no way that weeds are not going to pop up between them. And if you use the trashy wood mulch, it's going to take nitrogen from the soil. It's also going to promote the growth of nuisance mushrooms, some of which are very embarrassing to have in your front yard. So my advice, raised beds, enough room in between to use your lawnmower, one season, and you're done. And to answer your unasked question, you just spread compost in the raised beds between the plants. That'll keep down weeds, and scientific studies show 2 inches of compost prevents weeds just as well as 2 inches of that trash wood mulch. You can't lose, really. It's going to look beautiful. You'll grow what you like. It'll be bright. It'll make you happy. In the fall, maybe you'll plant spring bulbs in them. I know that deer are a problem almost anywhere, but I have never seen a deer in South Philly. I hope nobody writes and tells me they have. Anyway, that's my advice. Good luck to you, and happy to hear about your fig tree. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I am still on track to appear at the Allentown Public Library on Monday, April 27th at 6 p.m. Perhaps your only chance to grab one of the few remaining copies of my essential book. Visit allentownpl.org/events to pre-register for this free event. And then come right back to hear the right ways to care for your lawn and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from the NPR studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA.
Do you have vinyl albums, 45s, or CDs on your shelves that are taking up space and gathering dust? Why not donate them for a good cause? WDIY will receive profits from the donation, and you can claim a tax deduction. For more information, or to arrange for a drop-off or pickup, call 610-694-8100 or visit WDIY.org.
Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden. I am your host, Mike McGrath, and coming up a bit later, have you been assaulted by this ridiculous leprechaun lunatic who wants you to feed your lawn? Feed it. Well, he is the enemy. That's not what you should be doing right now. But I will tell you what you should be doing after more of your fabulous phone calls to 610-694-8100, extension number 3. Welcome to You Bet Your Garden, Jack.
Hi, Mike. Nice talking with you.
Nice
I'm
talking.
A big fan.
Oh, thank you. How big are you?
5'7", 170.
Okay. You're a medium-sized fan. All right. Where are you?
Altoona, Pennsylvania.
Oh, I have been to Altoona. It ain't Philadelphia.
It's better, actually.
Oh, for shame.
I went to school in Philadelphia many, many years ago.
Where'd you go?
But I love Penn. I went to Penn. I'm a veterinarian.
Oh, Penn has one of the most excellent veterinary schools in the country. When I was rescuing Great Pyrenees, the very large white mountain guardian dogs, they were the only facility that was capable of handling such a large animal.
Really? Wow. Well, I'm glad you got good service. Penn is the second oldest veterinary school in the world. 1884, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was around. Yeah. I was just a kid then. all right, what can we do you for, sir?
Okay, I've got really lousy soil in my little city home. It's all building rubble. I can't even tell you what it is. It's primarily clay and rock. Nothing grows there, and it's overgrown with creeping charlie and other kinds of perennial weeds that are virtually impossible to kill. So what I'd like to do is look for an alternative to grass. I was thinking micro clover or possibly planting wildflowers, either the tall ones or perennials or the low jobs, and was wondering what your suggestion might be.
My suggestion is to dream on. Just imagine what a beautiful thing that would be. But you can't get rid of creeping charlie that easily and replace it with a plant that is not aggressive. The physics just don't work. Now, how long have you lived there?
10 years.
And how big is this lawn area?
20 by 30 in the front. And
okay.
It surrounds my garden in the back, so like
okay,
a walkway.
So you do have a garden in the back.
I do. I amended it tremendously with leaf mold, and I've done Ruth Stout's thing of putting down flakes of straw as mulch and then allowing it to decompose. Mm-hmm. And I got, some pretty good things growing there. And I had a beautiful watermelon crop last year of sugar babies.
Good.
And a nice, I got raspberries growing, and I can grow nice tomatoes too. But the garden is overrun with creeping charlie and quack witchgrass. And so I put black plastic over it for 3 years, so everything's baked pretty nicely. And I just dig.
It shouldn't
make an
work.
Plant.
That should not work. How much sun do you get?
4 to 6 hours a day, southern exposure.
Okay, so it is southern. How come you get so few hours? Houses?
Houses and pine trees and that sort of thing, yeah. Mm.
Yeah, your black plastic is not going to kill creeping charlie. What was the grass you mentioned?
Witchgrass.
Yeah, it's not going to do that. You're telling me that you've had the plastic off for a year and these things haven't come back?
2 to 3 years, yeah. They haven't come back. That's correct.
Okay, so
around the perimeter, of course, but not under the plastic.
So did you not have a garden during this time period?
Well, I did. I would, as I said, cut holes in it and plant watermelon plants and tomato plants and that sort of thing. And I even planted asparagus from seed, and that's doing beautifully. So.
Okay, now you have to realize, first of all, the asparagus and the raspberries are going to spread.
They have. Yes, sir. They have.
Yeah, and they're going to continue to spread. And they are aggressive enough to thrive despite your weeds. How would you feel about moving the vegetables to the front of the house?
Well, I could do that, sure.
Okay. So here's how you get rid of persistent weeds. You go out there very early in the season, and you weed whack, and you hoe, and you get rid of as much of the greenery, or in the case of one of the weeds, reddery. You might have to add soil, but then you would add enough soil so that the surface would be level. You would saturate the soil for 24 hours. I mean, until it's bloated, until it can hold no more. Then you would stretch clear plastic so the sun shines through. And it will be plastic you'll buy that will be 2 or 3 mils thick, M-I-L, millimeters, yes. I figure. You'll make sure it's held down on all the sides by bricks or rocks or something like that. And then you will be giving up your front yard for a season. But you'll leave that on all season long until, you know, in your case, in your climate, you're going to leave it on until like October or November. Because the nice thing, the sun will shine through on sunny days no matter how cool the air temperature is. It's like being in a car in the winter. It's freezing outside, but you got full sun and you get hot.
Yeah.
Now you have what's called, you'll take the plastic off. I see no reason not to leave it on until springtime. Then you'll take it off, and now you have what's called a stale seed bed. Everything in there, diseases, weeds, is dead. And then, in the meantime, you should plan out your raised beds. 4x8, 4x4, whatever. Because you will grow in those, because you can fit twice as much in half the space. Plus, if any of the weeds come back, your raised beds are elevated a foot or two over what used to be the lawn, and you'll be able to deal with the weeds without harming your wanted plants. Also, in the fall, you want to collect and shred all the fall leaves you can and use them in the lanes in between your raised beds to keep weeds down. You can start with a couple of raised beds. You can do it all at once. But that will be a weed-free area as long as you pay the least bit of attention. And the backyard will be asparagus and raspberries. You're on the way to self-sustainability.
Boy, Mike, that sounds delicious.
Yes. Yeah, it takes a little time, but you know, it's like amortization. You're going to have a weed-free garden for 20 years if you play your cards right.
Okay. I'll just do a square foot gardening. I'm familiar with that.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, I hope that helps you. So good luck and goodbye for now.
Bye, Mike.
Well, as you know, a lot of great voicemails come into the show. We have decided that it would be totally appropriate to answer emails that contain all the information I would have asked the person about. Here's one of the good ones.
Hi, this is Vicki from Eastern North Carolina. We have very hot summers here and have a hard time with tomatoes. I have purple Cherokee, but I would like to know if there are other tomatoes that would be good, can tolerate the sun. I also like Ramas and Sweet 100s. So I want a sandwich tomato, the Ramas, and cherry tomatoes. Thank you for your help. I love your show. Bye.
What a great question for this time of year. Now, you're growing Cherokee Purple, which is a wonderful, great-tasting heirloom tomato that does indeed ripen up to a purplish color almost as much as the, quote, black tomatoes like Black Crim and Black Prince. I don't know off the top of my head that it is an especially heat-resistant tomato. But it just occurs to me now that you could contact your North Carolina State Extension and say, historically, what are some big eating and slicing tomatoes that do well in my region? I will tell you, no tomato will, it's not do well. But whenever the temperature goes over 90, tomatoes go into a dormancy. Their pollen fries on the plant. So an extended heat wave means an extended time where you're not getting any new viable flowers or new tomatoes. And the answer to that is one of my standard answers to everything. Just leave it alone. It'll perk right back up as soon as the weather breaks. If it is, again, really, really hot, you want to make sure your tomatoes are well watered from the base. And the nice thing about watering from the base, whether you do it or you set up drip lines, is it doesn't matter what time of day. If you're going to water during the day, you just cover your drip lines with some compost. That'll keep the water cool. The water's going to enter there cool, so it's perfectly fine. And cool water will help the tomato get through really hard times. That said, there are seed companies, southern seed companies, that specialize in hot region tomatoes. You know, their catalog will tell you everything you need to know, their online listing. But I know one of them has been in Florida for a long time. There are tomatoes that have been bred to take the heat. It's not a classic Roma that you want for making sauce, but it's a golden version of that. And a lot of these varieties have sun in their name. Cherry tomatoes, come on. Cherry tomatoes grow anywhere. They'll grow on your kitchen counter. Cherry tomatoes don't care. But in terms of your normal tomatoes, paste tomatoes and slicers, if they're in full sun during heat waves, it would benefit you and the plants greatly to provide some afternoon shade. Now, people with a big enough garden will often set up some hoops and have shade cloth to go over top of it. And the shade cloth just lets a lot of light in, but it tones it down by 20%, 30%. There's different levels of shade cloth. You know, when you explain your conditions, they'll advise you on the right one. I personally have never thrown out a beach umbrella. So in the unusual times where my tomatoes are cooking in the sun, I set up beach umbrellas for them. Actually, my assistant does, around 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Morning sun is essential. But even plants that are listed as full sun could use some shade when the sun is intense and temperatures are high. If possible, plant your tomatoes in a site that gets morning sun and afternoon shade natural. So less work for mother. But when you see your tomato plants all curled up on an uncomfortably hot and sunny day, you immediately think something's wrong. But it's not. I tell people, again, wait until after sunset. Go out and look at those plants at 10 o'clock. I bet you they perked back up. What they were doing during the day is kind of like what we would do, curling into a ball to keep heat off the leaves. Despite them being full sun plants, tomatoes can be injured by too much sun. It's called sun scald. That's another reason to shade them in the afternoon. And when you do water your plants at the base, you can't go out there with a watering can and think that you've watered them. Easiest way is to set a hose to just drip like an annoying faucet and let it go for a couple of hours and then move it to the next one. You want that water to get 6, 8, 10 inches down, and that will provide a lot of protection and you'll get better tomatoes. Okay, I hope that was good. Good luck to you. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and re-announce that I will make a rare personal appearance at the Allentown Public Library on Monday, April 27th at 6 p.m. Visit allentownpl.org/events for all the details and to register for this free event. Then we'll be right back with the correct ways to care for your cool season lawn and take more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from the NPR studios of WDIY FM in Bethlehem, PA. Are you in the middle of planting your garden? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, I'll tell you what you should and shouldn't be doing at this time of year to have healthy plants this summer. Plus your fabulous phone calls. That's on the next You Bet Your Garden. Welcome back to another fabulous episode of You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. I am your host, Mike McGrath. And yes, we are in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, I will warn you to disregard the lunatic leprechaun on TV screaming, feed your lawn, feed it. And now for something completely different. We have uncovered my original shows, and there's some great phone calls in there. So join us in this trip down memory lane.
Bobby, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you,
Bobby. Nice to see you. Just step right up to the plate. Keep up that aggressiveness there. That's what we like here at You Bet Your Garden.
Well, I just was calling about azaleas. I've had a real hard time getting them started, and I just wondered what's the best soil and how to grow them.
And where are you, Bob?
I'm in central Oklahoma.
Okay. Now, one of the problems that I've noticed when I visited Oklahoma is that your soil is alkaline. And you are aware that azaleas are acid-loving plants.
Okay. I don't know much about them, but I love them.
Okay, do you have access, first of all, to any compost?
Yes, my granddaughter has a bed.
That's my kind of granddaughter.
She's great.
Very good. And where do you plan to plant your azalea, Bobby?
Well, I've got really two options. We've got a stone fence
right
on the property, and it's pretty well shaded. And then there's also a bridge that my father just built, and we were thinking about possibly locating some near that bridge, but it's very close to a lake.
Now, azaleas do like some afternoon shade, but they need to get a fair amount of sun for you to get the maximum number of flowers.
Oh, okay.
What you want to do is enrich the soil with a ton of compost.
Okay.
And you want to get one of those big bricks of peat moss. Have you seen those things at the garden center?
Yes.
So you should really mix the peat moss into that compost, half and half.
Okay.
And that's going to be your planting bed. Azaleas like a really rich soil, and they like a really acidic soil.
Okay.
You might even want to pick up some test strips or buy a test kit.
Okay.
So that you can test the pH of your soil. Azaleas like it very low, like 5.5, maybe even 5.
Okay.
And I think if left alone, your soil is well above neutral. Neutral is 7. I think most of Oklahoma is like 7.5.
Mm-hmm.
They're very thirsty plants. They're very shallow-rooted plants. They like a rich soil. They like an acid soil. So plant them in that half compost, half peat moss.
Okay.
And then really mulch them well. Pine needles would be the absolute best if you could get it, or pine straw.
Okay.
If you can't, use shredded leaves. You can buy a bale of straw. Make sure it's not hay. But don't use wood chips.
All right.
Wood chips are very bad for azaleas, so would shredded bark be. But you want to mulch them. You want to mulch them deeper than any other plant in your property, especially when your summer hits. But a fair amount of sun, like a half a day of sun, will give you the maximum number of flowers.
And how often should you water them?
Man, in your summers, that's why you really want to keep a thick mulch.
Okay.
You may wind up watering them every other day if it doesn't rain.
Okay.
It really depends. The more you can enrich that soil with compost, it's going to stay moist, too. Especially, I'm talking a good 2 to 3 inches of shredded leaves or pine straw on top. And it's very important not to walk close to the plant. The roots are very sensitive to soil compaction. And monitor that soil and make sure it stays below a pH of 6. So you want to keep an eye on that. And if the peat moss doesn't do it, get some Hollytone.
Okay.
And feed the plant with Hollytone, especially in the spring. You should get beautiful blooms, and always prune an azalea after it's done blooming.
Oh, great. That's so helpful to know.
All right, Bobby. I know you're going to do fabulous.
Oh, thank you for all your help.
You take care.
Enjoy your show.
Thank you very much.
As promised, it is time for the question of the week, which we are calling Spring Lawn Care Advice. Leave it alone. First, I wish to assault, and annihilate the lame would-be leprechaun currently screaming at innocent people watching TV. I am myself part leprechaun and can assure you that none of us would be screaming, feed your lawn, feed it, especially in the spring. Spoiler alert, never feed a cool season lawn in the spring. Most, if not all, non-tarred areas of the U.S. have, quote, cool season lawns comprised of bluegrass, fescue, and or rye. These grasses are native to the U.K., which has the perfect climate for them. As they spread to other countries over the years, they were used to create vistas, areas of green meant to be seen at a distance. Oh, and by the way, no turf grass is native to the United States. Quote, Kentucky bluegrass, it's from Ireland. We never had turf grass here. It all came from other countries. In my old lawn care lectures, I would tell people to stand over top of a small area of their lawn and look down at it. They'll probably see a couple of bare spots and weeds and are overcome by the compulsion to, quote, fix it. And just like home repairs that you're really not qualified to perform, that fix quickly becomes an episode of a sitcom with you generating the laughter. But I can fix that lawn in under 5 minutes, I would continue. Walk 50 feet or so away from the lawn. Turn around and look back. What do you see? A seemingly perfect vista of green. Miracle! Lawns were never meant to be stared at up close. And if you are one of those people, you will only succeed at making yourself miserable. Perhaps meditation, medication, or hypnosis could help. But as with many things in life, the lesson is not to stare at minor imperfections. I know the stores are loaded with toxic lawn care products in the spring. And if there is one thing we humans are good at, it's selling things to other people by wrapping them up in an attractive package, which tied to other advertising is designed to make you feel guilty if you don't buy it. But then you will hear, you're letting the entire neighborhood down. Buy those bags and spread them, warn the villagers, who luckily don't have pitchforks because they wouldn't know what to do with them. One exception, applying corn gluten meal in the early spring to prevent dormant crabgrass seeds from sprouting, and adding beneficial nematodes once the soil warms up enough so they can kill soon to have been Japanese beetles before they can hatch into ravenous adults. Okay, that is two things. Just wanted to make you realize you're taking advice from a guy who can't count to two. Okay, what can you do now? Do not cut your lawn lower than 3 inches in full sun, 3.5 inches in shade, and that height is after you're done cutting. Don't trust lawnmower markings. Use a ruler. Otherwise, you're removing so much greenery that the grass can no longer photosynthesize, begins to brown out and die. No, 3 inches of green is not a, quote, tall cut. It's the cut that your lawn requires to be naturally healthy. And it fills in some of the bare spots caused by your scalping. Otherwise, your lawn will probably need water. Here in my part of PA, we're caught in what I call an invisible drought. You don't notice it, but we have gone more than a week without rain, face a week and more with no rain in the forecast, and we started out 10 inches below our historical average. That's why my township has posted large burn ban in effect signs, and the weather guessers on TV warn of severe wildfire danger. But watering any plant for 20 minutes or so in the afternoon, like when you get home from work or whatever, is worse than useless. To become fully saturated, plants need an inch of water delivered all at once. Once a week in normal times, twice during really hot weeks, or until a drought like mine is over. But only in the morning. To prevent disease, you must not water in the evening. And watering in the heat of the day is also worse than useless. You want to stop the water in time for things to dry out before evening can come. I personally set up a simple impact sprinkler to cover most of my vegetable garden and hook it up to a timer that will turn it on at 4 a.m. and off at 9. Those of you with automatic systems should be able to adjust them to this schedule. And if not, why not? Deep infrequent water saturates the roots, and then not watering for a spell allows those roots to dry out and maybe even grow new roots that reach deeper, making your lawn even more resistant to extended periods of dryness. A rain gauge is a great help here. Empty it once a week, say on Sundays. If it held an inch of rain when you dumped it, don't water right away, because a drowned plant is a very unhappy plant. If it held more, great. Don't water again until you go a week without significant rain. And as long as you can manage it, make sure the lawn dries out. And finally, mow only with a freshly sharpened or brand new blade. A dull blade rips the grass blades to shreds, and they are no longer capable of storing water. A sharp cut just takes a little off the top without any kind of destruction, and those blades can hold water. And yes, you will get to do things that will benefit your cool season lawn, but all of them happen in the fall. I promise to cover that topic this summer. After this NPR show goes dark, and when I move to the GardensAlive/Gurney website, where new work from me will appear every week, we will then continue with fresh material and some surprises we haven't quite worked out yet. But I am not going away. I'm just downsizing, and there's a lot of work still to be done. Oh, and until then, we still got shows to do for NPR, WDIY, and our wonderful affiliate stations. So please call and or email us with some fresh questions so we don't disappoint nobody. Well, that sure was some good advice about ignoring lunatic would-be leprechauns and caring for your lawn the correct way. Now, wasn't it? Luckily, you can read those details over at your leisure, or of course your leisure, by following the link for the Gardens Alive question of the week at the top of the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. An added note, You Bet Your Garden will remain right here on NPR for another month and a half. And we need your emails and phone calls now, because it seems like you thought we were leaving that day. And we, meaning me, will continue with new material in another form already under construction right after our NPR show goes dark. So feed your favorite show. Now, feed it. Yikes, my producer is threatening to scalp my lawn if I don't get out of the studio. We must be out of time, but you can call us anytime at 610-694-8100, extension number 3. Write it down, or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at yougetyourgarden1@gmail.com. No matter how you contact us, please include your location. You'll find all of our contact information, plus answers to your garden questions, audio of this show, audio of recent shows, and links to our internationally renowned podcast, all at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. You Bet Your Garden is an hour-long public radio show and podcast, all produced and delivered to you weekly by NPR station WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. You Bet Your Garden was created by Mike McGrath. Mike McGrath was created when a young woman convinced him to grow raspberries for her. Our musical director is Ken Queter. Our social media director is Amanda Norfleet. Our peerless prince of profound production is James Ziprow. Margaret McConnell is the executive director of WDIY-FM. Our executive producer is the always lovely Jonas Bowen. And our incredible assistant is the awesome Ninja Sean. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. And yes, I'm finally getting peas, potatoes, and lettuces in the ground, which is a good thing because my walls are tired of me crawling on them. So I won't be doing that until I see you again next week.